Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. This is the third hour on AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. We're going to have a very special guest in a minute, and then for the rest of the show, it's going to be your calls. You can talk about anything you want to talk about. I've got a few subjects that I'm going to bring up. But before we even get to our next guest, I just want to remind people to go to the Facebook page at Mad as Hell in America. We were talking to Bud Howard, who is a 32-year factory man in a place called Keokuk, Iowa. They have had a 9-month long lockout. We've got families who are really struggling out there just to survive, and need to hear from you. We have an address where you can send a check. They don't even have anything online where you can make a donation. You're going to be sending it right to the office. I won't bother giving it to you on the air, but send them $5, $10, whatever you can, just to let them know that we're out here and that we care. I don't think you can underestimate the impact of a check from Portland, Oregon, or New York, or Florida, or wherever it is you're listening to this show, to let them know that we care. Put Mad as Hell in America in the memo, so they know that you heard them here. This does me no good. It's just letting them know that you heard about them and you care. And that's really, really important. Again, go to the Facebook page, Mad as Hell in America. All right. So our next guest, you know, on this show, we talk a lot about how do we become dangerous again, right? I mean, we've become so complacent. A few weeks ago, we did a show about the 60s and we featured Bobby Seale and Jerry Rubin, being outrageous, being bold, really speaking truth to power, right? And until we begin to speak truth to power, no one is going to respect what we have to say. We can't speak half truth to power, kind of truth to power. Gee, I sure wish you would. We can't just vote and turn away. We've got to make a bold stand for what we believe in. And I often talk about how we have to risk something for that. We have to risk our comfort for that. And I challenge myself on that. And I challenge you on that. I challenge all of us on that, because we won't get the world that we want to live in until we are willing to risk something for it. You see, that's key, right? The meek maybe one day shall inherit the earth, but they won't inherit it because some invisible God handed it over to them. We will inherit it because we demanded it. And so our next guest is Tim DeChristopher, somebody who did take a stand and did risk something. In March of 2011, a federal jury in Salt Lake convicted environmental activist Tim DeChristopher of 2 felony counts for disrupting the auction of more than 100,000 acres of federal land for oil and gas drilling. He did this during the Bush administration. DeChristopher was charged in December 2008 with infiltrating a public auction and disrupting the Bush administration's last-minute move to auction off oil and gas exploitation rights on vast swaths of federal land. He was a student at the time. DeChristopher posed as a bidder and bought 22,000 acres of land with no intent to pay in an attempt to save the property from drilling. I think that's pretty bold. He faces now up to 10 years in prison. That is really serious. This clip I'm going to play is from right after his conviction.
Everything that went on inside that building convinced me that I was alone and that I was weak. They tried to convince me that I was like a little finger out there on my own that can easily be broken. And all of you out here were the reminder, but that I was connected to a hand with many fingers that could unite as one fist. And that fist could not be broken by the power that they have in there. Is not a symbol of violence. That fist is a symbol that we will not be misled into thinking we are alone. We will not be lied to and told we are weak. We will not be divided, and we will not back down. That fist is a symbol that we are connected and that we are powerful. It's a symbol that we hold true to our vision of a healthy and just world, and we are building the self-empowering movement to make it happen. That now I'll have to go to prison. We know that now that's the reality. And many before me have gone to jail for justice. And if we're going to achieve our vision, many after me will have to join me as well.
That was Tim DeChristopher right after his sentencing in March of this year. And I got to say that When I first saw that, it gave me chills. I feel like this is someone who is willing to speak truth to power, who has put a lot of his life on the line to build the just world that he wants to live in. Tim DeChristopher is going to be sentenced on July 23rd of this year. That's less than 4 weeks away. And he faces up to 10 years in federal prison. Tim, hold on, let me get the button. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. And just to clarify real quick, the sentencing is actually on July 26th.
Oh, 26th.
23rd.
Okay. Yep. So it's just a little more than 4 weeks away. Before we get into where you think that all of that's going to land, first of all, I admire the stand that you took. I know that it's probably required a lot of personal sacrifice.
That's kind of what I thought going in, that it would be a lot of personal sacrifice. And I've found the opposite to be true, really.
What do you mean?
I mean, I found that the sacrifice, that sacrificing my freedom, that's what I thought I was doing. But in retrospect, I've seen that sacrificing my freedom was actually what I was doing before the auction. When I was following all the rules and being obedient to a system that I knew was destructive to my own future and that I knew was fundamentally unjust. Because in order to be obedient, I had to consider myself this helpless victim that didn't have the freedom to direct the course of my own society. And that was really disempowering and frustrating. I mean, I had a lot of tension at that point in my life. And I'm a much calmer person now than I was before I jumped all the way in and really started resisting the path that we're on.
Wow. That's a really interesting reversal. So I can really resonate with that. I want to get into that, but I think we should give our listeners some information first about what you did. So take us back in time. Let's start with the auction. What was being auctioned off? Why was it funky? What were you doing there, and how did you find yourself in a position when I apologize for kind of laughing, but I think it's kind of funny, you just going in there bidding on the land. I like the image of it. I mean, not funny in a bad way, but in this kind of powerful and absurd way. So take me through the story. What happened? What was going on? Why were you there, and how did you find yourself in that position?
Well, this auction was the very last auction of the Bush administration in December of 2008, and it had been delayed from a couple months earlier in order to allow this process to be completed called the resource management plans, that are these long-term plans for public lands, for huge sections of public lands. And so all of Utah had these new resource management plans that took the entire 8 years of the Bush administration to redo, because it's a big process. So all these lands that they were auctioning off to the oil industry were lands that under the previous long-term plan had been off limits to resource development. A lot of them were, especially the lands that I won, were lands right outside of Canyonlands and Arches National Parks, the kind of like spectacular red rock areas that Utah's really known for. So they were protected. They were off limits from drilling, and it took the entire 8 years of the Bush administration to rewrite those rules. And they had squeezed in this one last auction to then get those parcels into the hands of the Bush administration, or into the hands of the oil industry, before anybody else could come in and reverse that process.
So you were there with that knowledge, protesting the lease of this pristine land in Utah that never should have been on the block in the first place.
Right. And so there was a lot of attention to this process, that people felt like there were a lot of rules that weren't followed, a lot of objections to it that weren't being listened to. So there were people protesting outside. They were holding signs on the sidewalk. And I decided that this was a big enough issue that it needed more than just holding a sign. Over the course of 2008, I'd become more and more concerned about the climate crisis and had been seeing that what we'd been doing in the climate movement hadn't been working, and that the rules that we were playing by were rules written by those who profit from the status quo. And if we were actually going to change things, we'd have to step outside of those rules.
Let's stop there for a minute. What are those rules? What do you mean?
I mean, what we're told are the paths to change that we're supposed to be doing. Up through 2008, I'd been what I considered to be an activist. You know, I was writing letters to my congressman and, like, meeting with the governor's office and signing petitions and, you know, riding my bike and doing all these things that we're told are supposed to lead to change. And I was seeing that those pathways or supposed pathways to change that are presented to us are actually just function more as pacifiers to make us feel like we're doing something without actually changing any of the fundamentals of the system.
This frustration that you started this with, you were kind of the little hamster on the activist wheel, doing all the right things, playing inside this choreographed dance, but you felt that it actually was nobody had any respect for what you were doing in the system. Power had no respect for the truth that you were laying out, right?
Right. And over the course of that year, I was also studying social movement history in this country and seeing the kind of things that had led to change, which generally involved civil disobedience and really creating a lot of tension and forcing a choice. And that the situation that the environmental movement was in was actually a co-opted movement where we were just spinning our wheels and not actually working towards any actual change.
Right. I share that frustration.
That's the mindset. That's the mindset that I had going in.
Okay.
And I was thinking, you know, this is such a perfect example of the drill now, think later mentality that's causing these problems, that I might as well take this opportunity to take a stand. And I didn't know what that would look like. I thought I'd go in and make a speech or yell something as I got dragged out by security. But rather than drag me out, when I walked in, they said, "Hi, are you here for the auction?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am."
See, that's the part that makes me laugh. I love it. Anyway, I knew that going in. So anyway, yeah, keep going. Yeah. I love it. Oh, yes, I am. As a matter of fact, I am. All right, keep going.
And then they said, "Would you like to be a bidder?" And I said, "Well, yes, I would."
I love it.
But even at that point, I was still thinking, well, okay, I'll sign up to be a bidder so that I can get inside and make a speech or something like that.
But you're not actually thinking at that point you're going to bid on the property.
Right.
Right.
It wasn't
okay
until I got inside the auction room with my bid card in hand, it was bidder number 70, that I suddenly saw that I had the opportunity to really have a big impact on this auction.
Wow.
And perhaps do enough to cause enough confusion that things would still be up in the air when the new administration came in and they could actually turn things around.
All right, so let's stop for a minute. The moment this idea occurs to you, so you walk in, you're not, at this point you're just following an impulse, you don't know where it's leading you, you suddenly have a bidder card in your hand, and you realize, wow, I'm now considered a legitimate bidder. Does any part of you go, no, don't do this?
Well, it's been about 20 minutes or so weighing the consequences.
Hold on one second. That is my music, and I want our listeners to hold on for the answer to that question, because I think what we go through as individuals to take this stand, the process that we go through, is very, very important. So we're talking to Tim DeChristopher. You can find out more at peacefuluprising.org. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. We'll be right back.
AM 620 KPOJ conducts various contests weekdays and weekends at various times and offer various prizes for its listeners. By participating in a KPOJ contest, you are agreeing to be bound by the official contest rules for the contest. No purchase necessary. Participants and winners must be U.S. residents at least 18 years old and may enter only one time unless otherwise stated in the official contest rules. Only one prize per household for the contest within a 30-day period. For complete contest rules, visit the main office of this station during regular business hours.
This entire piece of music was played with only two instruments, a right hand and a left hand. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life with hands-only CPR. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. Hands-only CPR is recommended by the American Heart Association, and it's incredibly easy and effective. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. The power to help save a life is in your hands. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
Wild animals face a lot of risks, but the unprecedented destruction of their habitat threatens their very existence. Curbing habitat loss is a huge task. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust works with private landowners to protect wildlife by preserving natural habitat and establishing permanent sanctuaries. Call 1-800-729-SAVE. That's 1-800-729-SAVE. Or visit wildlifelandtrust.org.
Mad as hell in America with Adam Klugman. Now on Portland's Progressive Talk, 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only, one and only, and thank God for it, progressive talk station. We're talking to Tim DeChristopher, who in March of 2011 was convicted by a jury in Salt Lake City. He is an environmental activist. He was given two felony counts for disrupting an auction of more than 100,000 of pristine acres of federal land that the Bush administration was trying to shove through at the last minute. He is going to be sentenced on July 26th. That is coming up, and he faces on 5 years on each felony count for a total of up to 10 years. And in a minute, we're going to ask him how he thinks it's going to all roll out. But we were telling his story. Christopher, welcome back. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
I'm going to encapsulate real quick so that we catch our listeners up in case they just tuned in. So Tim is protesting at the auction of this sale of this pristine land that shouldn't even be on the block that the Bush administration is pushing through in the 11th hour of its administration. Tim gets kind of fed up feeling like, I've just had it. This is too tame. Something more radical needs to happen. He walks in thinking he's going to yell something or disrupt the meeting. He just can't. He's mad as hell. Can't take it anymore. Walks in, and they ask him if he was a bidder. He says yes. And they say, would you like a bidder number? And he says yes. And they hand him number bidder 77. Am I right?
70.
Oh, sorry, bidder 70. And he walks in, and now he's suddenly in the room, and he's holding a bidding card, and he has the power to actually bid, not the money, but the power to bid on the land. And I had asked you right before the break, Tim, what was that moment like when the thought occurred to you? Was there any resistance within you, or did you just think, absolutely, let's go for it?
It took me about 20 minutes or so to make that decision, and I was weighing the consequences. I just signed a piece of paper when I registered that said, I understand it's a federal offense to bid without the intent to pay. So I was thinking, if I do this, I'll probably go to jail for a couple of years. And I thought, could I live with that?
Wow.
And in a fairly short amount of time, I thought, yeah, that would suck, but I could live with it.
Right.
But then I also weighed the consequences of inaction and thought, if I see this opportunity right in front of me to do something perhaps significant to defend a livable future, and I don't take it, and we stay on this path that we're on, and I witness these catastrophic consequences that we're on track for, and knowing that I had an ability to do something about it, and I didn't take it because I was scared of going to jail, could I live with that?
Wow.
And that's what I weighed for that 20 minutes and finally realized that I just couldn't live with that. That if I had to witness this unprecedented human suffering that we're on track for, knowing that I turned my back on an opportunity to do something about it, that would be more than I could live with. And so I decided I had to act, and I started first just driving up the prices. I would wait till it got down to one bidder and then jump in and drive it up, sometimes by an order of magnitude, and then step out before I actually want anything. But I also was thinking, you know, I could be doing more. I could actually be taking these parcels off the table. And so finally I decided I had to go all out and just started winning every single parcel and won 14 in a row before they finally stopped the auction and took me out.
So you won four. How much money did you commit at that point?
With the 14 parcels I won, it was about $1.8 million.
So the oil company was going to get that much land for that little money. I mean, that's nothing for them. They've got that in like a shoebox.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the parcels that were going for $10 or $12 an acre.
Oh, my God. And this is public land, right?
Yeah, and the oil industry certainly knew that they were worth a lot more than that. You know, when I was driving up the prices, I remember one that I jumped in at $17 an acre, and I drove it up to $240 an acre, and the oil company was still going strong. You know,
because they knew it was worth a lot more than that.
Yeah, they knew it was worth far more.
So what was the outcome? So you did this, somebody finally said, well, you know, I've seen pictures of you. If you guys go on the internet and see Tim DeChristopher, he's a young looking guy. How old are you, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm 29.
29. So he's a young guy in his 20s who's suddenly there bidding stuff up. At some point you became suspicious to them. They stopped the auction, right?
Yeah.
And what was the net effect of what happened after that?
Well, then an agent came over to me and showed a badge and said, can we go talk outside? And he was just kind of asking me what I was doing, what my intentions were. And I told him very clearly that I was there to try to stand in the way of this auction because it was a fraud against the American people and a threat to my future. And so at that point, he took me into custody and then...
He cuffed you.
And that... No, they just took
you.
Me into a back part of the offices there and questioned me for about 3 hours.
And so how are you feeling at that point? I mean, so I want to just stop. I mean, it's very personal. I want our callers, if you want to talk to Tim, give us a call, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. What do you think about what Tim has done? I mean, you know, we talk a lot about doing this kind of thing on the show, but I personally have never done it. So that's why I'm really interested in what it was like for you. You're faced with this real moment where you know your life is going to split off into essentially two paths. You're either going to go for this and know that it's going to change the whole course of your life, or you're not going to do this, and you're going to have to live with that feeling that I had an opportunity to take a stand and I didn't. And you had to weigh those two in the moment in some very visceral kind of way. So now they escort you into the back room. How are you feeling about this? Are you going, oh my God, what have I done? What is the experience like at that point?
By that point, I was pretty calm. I mean, it was very tense up until I started winning all the parcels.
Were you having fun?
Once I made that decision to go all out, I felt totally relaxed.
Really?
You know, the tension that I'd been feeling was relieved instantly. I mean, I felt like I had made my choice, and I definitely had a sense that my life was never going to be the same. But I felt like I had made my choice, and this is the path that I was on now.
So back to where we kind of originally started this conversation, which was that you said, you know, there was a certain calm. Oh, man, the music is coming up too fast. Will you stay on for another segment? This topic is really important, and it's the core of what I talk about on this show, which is why I find it so fascinating. If you want to make a comment on what Tim DeChristopher has done, if you want to talk to him, ask him a question, numbers are 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. This is AM 620, KPOJ, Matt is Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. We'll be right back with Tim DeChristopher. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. We've been talking to Tim DeChristopher, and I'm going to get Tim back on the line. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So we've been talking to Tim DeChristopher, who faces actually 2 5-year sentences for felony counts for disrupting an auction of more than 100,000 acres of federal land for oil and gas drilling. Chris, I put out a call for calls. I wasn't sure if people were out there listening, but this has got people really activated, and I want to get to calls, and we're just going to take calls for the rest of the show for the next 2 segments. So, but first I want to talk a little bit, so callers, hold on. Let's talk a little bit about peacefuluprising.org. That was how I found your story. What's your affiliation with them? They're doing a national, they just did a national day of action for you. Let's give them a plug and talk a little bit about what's upcoming for you.
Yeah, Peaceful Uprising was a group that I helped start after the auction in 2009, and is a climate justice organization that is designed to help empower other actions like this, empower serious nonviolent actions to defend a livable future. And they've been growing and maturing over the last couple of years, They were the organization that really mobilized outside of the trial. You know, they realized fairly early on that this, the whole prosecution of me was about setting an example that scared others into obedience, that,
right.
You know, scared other people into being obedient, even when their government was acting illegally. And so they wanted to make sure that that attempt wasn't successful and that they responded with joy and resolve in the face of that intimidation. So during the course of my trial, Peaceful Uprising and about 800 folks took over the block of the federal courthouse in Salt Lake City and claimed that space for the whole 4 days of the trial. And they were out there singing, literally singing all day long for the whole 4 days of the trial.
All 4 days?
Yeah.
Wow.
And made a strong showing there. They were also mobilized around the sentencing, which was supposed to happen this past week. And, you know, that was an interesting thing. A week and a half ago, the judge announced right at the last minute that that sentencing was going to be delayed until late July. And he made that announcement right after Peaceful Uprising had made a big call to action for people to mobilize around that sentencing.
So there you go. There's the evidence that it works.
Yeah, it was the same thing that we saw with the trial. The trial was actually delayed 9 times over the course of 2 years. And usually it would happen right after Peaceful Uprising made a big announcement about something that they were going to do outside of the trial.
PeacefulUprising.org is the website if you want to help. Money. You can donate on their website. There's lots of days of action and lots of things going on there. I think it's an incredible site. People doing incredible work. Tim, are you ready to take some calls?
Sure.
All right. So I'm going to go in order of how long people have been waiting. John in Vancouver, Washington. Welcome to Matt, It's Hell in America. You're speaking with Adam Klugman and Tim DeChristopher. What's up?
You are my hero, and I admire you greatly. I wish there were something I could really say that was intelligent as these great remarks you've been making. All I can do is wish you well. And I would have just one question, and that is, Tim, would you consider this one more example of, now I understand that this all began under the Bush administration, but it's continued, the persecution of you. Would you consider this one more example of the way the Obama administration has not just continued, but amped up the persecution of whistleblowers and activists? And thanks. I'll take my answer over the air.
John, hold on 1 second. We lost him. John, I want you to call back. Unfortunately, Tim DeChristopher got disconnected, probably pilot error on my part. We're talking to Tim DeChristopher, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. Unfortunately, Tim did not hear your call. We are trying to get him back on the line. Not sure what happened. Probably my doing. I'm going to go to Rob for now. Rob, welcome to Matt, It's Hell in America. We're getting Tim DeChristopher back on the line. Welcome. What's up?
Hi, thanks. I was curious as to why they did not require paper documentation from everyone who entered the room that proved that they had the financial resources to pay for the lots in the first place?
That's a really good question. I wish I had Tim online to answer it. Callers, please hold on. We are getting Tim back online. It does seem strange to me that, you know, it's kind of like a stated income on a loan. They ask him if he's going to... if he's a bidder, he says yes. They say, great, come on in.
Yeah, got to be some proof of legitimacy.
Yeah, well, maybe, you know, there's a certain degree of arrogance that the Bush administration had in those days. And it's their last kind of effort going out. So they may have been a little sloppy on their own. I don't think it was coming up on anybody's radar. I probably think they weren't taking the protesters outside very seriously. Rob, I'm going to write down your question. I don't know why we're having trouble getting Tim back on the line. But we will get him back. If you want to hold on, you can re-ask that question. I'm going to fill some time while we get Tim back on the line. Tim, if you are somehow listening, you can try calling us at 503-248-0620, and we'll put you on the line with listeners. I'm not sure what happened there, but Tim is gone. He will be back. 503-248-0620 are the numbers, or 1-866-452-0620. We've been talking to Tim DeChristopher. If you want to help out, and if you've been listening and you know what we're talking about here, you can go to peacefuluprising.org. peacefuluprising.org and check it out and see what's going on there. There's lots of days of action. This was an organization that Tim DeChristopher started and has been supporting him through his trial. He faces 10 years in prison. I mean, I don't know if anybody was listening to his story, but it was pretty amazing what he ended up doing. He found himself kind of just progressing along and having to make a greater commitment as time goes on, you know, slowly kind of sweating out and eking out each level of commitment until he found himself completely immersed in a full commitment to take a stand that he knew was going to change the course of his life. I mean, and isn't that what we talk about on this show all the time? I'm going to go to another caller. Let's go to Jeff in Portland. You called earlier.
Yeah, hey, Adam. I just wanted to emphasize two points that haven't been brought up yet. According to Chris Hedges, who writes for Truth Dig, and CommonDreams.org also reprints his articles, he did an article on this Monday, and he said in the piece that the judge refused to let Tim's defense team inform the jury that the auction was later overturned and declared illegal. The judge also refused to let the defense team inform the jury that Tim had raised the money for the initial payment and offered it to the Bureau of Land Management, which then refused to accept it. You know, so this is a case where President Obama or Eric Holder or somebody in the administration could step in and overturn this conviction. And this is one of these lines in the sand that we need to draw. And if Obama's not going to act to protect the environment, and including the Keystone Pipeline coming up this summer, which, if authorized, would allow the open up the Alberta tar sands and is considered the biggest carbon bomb on the planet toward global warming, to pass the no return point. And, you know, I feel we need to, as progressive, support somebody like Ron Paul, who at least would legalize hemp, which could be used as a biofuel, and maybe, you know, in that way, reduce this addiction to oil.
Jeff, thanks so much for the call. I finally have Chris back on the line. Tim, welcome back. I'm so sorry. I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah, sorry about that. I just got dropped when you tried to take the other call.
Yeah, not the first time I've done that. What a drag. I'm really sorry about that. So we had a call, the first call, which I don't know if you probably didn't hear it. Someone said, so you walked right in and they didn't ask for any, they didn't ask for any credentials, any identification, any verification of who you were?
I gave them my driver's license. And, you know, the thing is, I signed up with my real name, my real address, and I wrote that I was representing myself. What they didn't do was any kind of verification process of whether or not I actually had the ability to pay. And that's something that generally is done with major auctions like that, like art auctions and things like that. And also used to be done with these auctions, but it was part of the deregulation of the Bush years of, well, you know, we don't need rules like that to actually do background checks on people. And I think part of just kind of the arrogance of government and the oil industry of, you know, who's going to try to stop us. You know?
That was what I had answered for you a little bit and said, you know, probably a certain degree of arrogance last days of the Bush administration. Well, I've still got a full board. If you want to talk to Tim, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. I'm going to try and take someone. I hope I don't disconnect you. If you do, hang up. We'll call you right back. Okay?
Well, you know, I also heard the end of the question about the Obama administration.
Okay, yeah. I was going to ask that. Go ahead.
And, you know, you'd actually said in the intro that I was indicted in December of 2008. I actually wasn't indicted for 4 months after the auction until April of 2009, well into the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been the Obama administration that's been behind this indictment the whole time and behind the continued prosecution. you know, the federal government, the Justice Department, is now asking for the maximum punishment that any interpretation of the guidelines, which is about 4.5 years. You know, so they're as aggressively as they can. It's not like they're not involved. It's just that they're involved on the other side.
Yeah, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Let's go to John. I'm going to click it. I hope I don't disconnect you. John, I did. He disconnected. There's something up with the phones. John, welcome to Mad as Hell in America.
This is John in South Carolina. Am I the right one?
Yeah, you are, John. You're on the air.
Okay. The last caller gave me all the answers to the questions that I had. This is an adulteration of the law, and we need to get a letter writing some way through some of the other programs, your program only, get letter writing to the White House or the Justice Department, and let them know that if he spends one day in jail, they lose our vote. I mean, this is just absolutely unconscionable.
I couldn't agree more. John, what I want to suggest to you is go to peacefuluprising.org.
I already did.
They have National Days of Action. You can organize a National Day of Action in defense of Tim on in your area. And I appreciate the call,
and it was really well said.
Yeah, you can be the key organizer there. So, thanks so much for the call. I'm going to try and bring Tim back on. Tim, back on. I hope that this is going to work. I'm so sorry about this. I was all excited about the calls because people are all fired up. I'm going to go to Chuck in Roseburg. I hope you can stay on the line, Tim. Chuck in Roseburg. No, we keep losing him. Darn it. Chuck in Roseburg. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America. What's up?
Hey, I'm with you, Adam. I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second. I'm the judge, 30 days community service. What's wrong with that for disrupting in general?
Yeah, he's not getting 30 days. He's facing 2 5-year felony charges.
Right, that's our tax money going to waste. Look at the incredible waste here.
I think it's a waste. I don't think he should spend a minute in jail. The whole thing was rigged. The whole darn thing was illegal to begin with. That's Mad as Hell. That's the Mad as Hell in American Music. We will be right back. Sorry about the technical difficulties. At the break, we're going to try and work this out so Tim can answer your questions. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. I'm mad as hell that this keeps screwing up. We'll be right back.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. I really apologize for the technical difficulties. I do think that we have worked it out. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
I hope I haven't spoken too soon. I really am sorry about that. It's just wildly obnoxious. I'm going to go to Poe in Portland. Welcome. It's not working. I keep dropping him. This is driving me nuts. Tim, thank you so much. Poe, do you have a comment? This is our last segment. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America.
Yeah, I'll try to make this short. I don't know. You know, I think like most of your callers, I'm really just fired up right now. And I just feel really, really bad for Tim here. And
so do I.
Yeah, you know, it's just, I'm not even an environmentalist. And, you know, just complete disrespect for the law that, you know, this, you know, for his legal rights that he has experienced. It makes me really upset. It's kind of, you know, when we talk about, you know, this whole choosing between two evils, it really is just the kind of thing that makes me just almost not want to reelect Obama. I was a, you know, strong supporter of him. And now I feel like, you know, so what if we suffer more with Republicans? I would, there's only a limited amount of suffering that really we should take from our federal government. And I'm almost getting really upset at the notion that, you know, that somehow, you know, suffering under a Democratic leadership, which should not stand for this kind of behavior. You know, I don't know what to say. I'm
mad as hell, too, Poe. Thanks for the call. We're going to go back to Tim. Tim, we're going to have you on. Callers, I'm sorry. I got to put Tim at the top of the list. He's my guest. Can't seem to work it out. I'm mad as hell, too, particularly that the Obama administration is prosecuting this with the same kind of verve that the Bush administration did, which shows you who our federal government works for and who the presidency works for. Tim, welcome back to the show. I'm not going to try to do any calls. I really want to get this is our last segment. And I want to give you the time that you need because I think it's really important. I want to go back to this point about how you found more freedom after you had made this action. I think this is really important to our listeners. You found a certain freedom that you found yourself tense and ambivalent before, and that you had moved to a place where you'd found a certain amount of freedom after you had taken this action. How do you account for that?
Well, Edward Abbey once said that sentiment without action is the ruin of the soul. And I think, you know, for a long time before the auction, I'd had the sentiment that I needed to be doing more. I had this sentiment that the climate crisis is the greatest crisis that humanity's ever faced. And my action and response was like writing letters and riding my bike. And I knew that it was not in accordance with my sentiment. And I think when I was going all out there in the auction and the kind of consistent resistance that I've had since, has actually been action in line with my sentiment, and I found that that's been very healing of that kind of tension that I was feeling before.
Yeah, I actually had this image of kind of this flow of energy lining up between how you felt and the actions that you were taking, and then suddenly there's no tension because they're not pulling at each other. You feel very strongly, and yet you're acting in a somewhat timid manner, and I can really relate to that because I also feel very strongly. I have a radio show, but, you know, that's all, I think, within fairly safe boundaries. I try to make this as dangerous as I can, but I understand that there's a line that happens, a lineup rather, that happens when we really align our actions with our values. And that's what I sense from you, and a real centeredness. Let me ask you this. How do you think that this is going to go for you, your sentencing on July 26th?
I don't know. I mean, it's still too early to tell. My judge is known as one of the most unpredictable, so I think he could really come down anywhere in the spectrum of possibilities. But, you know, I've also seen that the government is starting to realize that perhaps the worst thing that they could do is to give me a strong sentence and invite a strong backlash.
Yeah, right.
Piss a lot more people off.
Right.
And, you know, I think the reason that that this last delay happened is that the government knows that there's no good scenario for them in this. They're, you know, that either they give me a very light sentence and green light this kind of action and encourage others to follow me, or they give me a harsh sentence and piss a lot of people off and invite a lot of backlash. And I think that's what civil disobedience does. It puts the government in that kind of no-win situation where they're going to look bad to the American people no matter what they do. I feel like right. that's the powerful position that we put ourselves in with civil disobedience.
Right on.
That's why it's been so effective in social movements in the past.
Yeah, that let me ask you maybe a slightly more difficult question. What do you want to happen?
I don't know. I mean, I certainly have to admit that I'm scared of going to prison.
You'd go to federal prison, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And it's a scary thing. I'd say that I'm less scared of it now than I was 2 years ago. The closer it gets and the more I learn about it, the more realistic it gets, the less scary it is. But it still is a scary option. But I think that it's much less scary than staying on the path that we're on now. I think that's the scariest option is the status quo. I don't know what kind of outcome would be the most impactful in terms of promoting this movement. Whether I'd be more effective on the outside or more effective as a political prisoner. There's been a lot of debate about that. I've had a lot of very
Tim to Christopher, I've got about 10 seconds. Peaceful
okay.
Uprising. Tim, thank you so much for being on the show. We're up against a hard break. I could talk 2 hours about this. Peacefuluprising.org. Go check it out.